It is a delight to be with you again. Let me share with you a few verses from Joshua, the fourth chapter, beginning to read at the first verse. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. When the entire nation had finished crossing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Select 12 men from the people, one from each tribe, and command them, 'Take 12 stones from here out of the middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood. Carry them over with you and lay them down in the place where you camp tonight.'" Then Joshua summoned the 12 men from the Israelites, whom he had appointed, one from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, "Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder, one for each of the tribes of the Israelites, so that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, 'What do these stones mean to you?' then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off in front of the ark of the covenant. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the Israelites a memorial forever." And the Israelites did as Joshua commanded, and they took up 12 stones out of the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord told Joshua, carried them over with them to the place where they camped, and laid them down there. And then in parentheses, in the ninth verse, these words, the focus of our time today. Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. Amen. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So if you look at the outline today of the, let me see if I can find it here, the E100. You see this? And it says, guest preacher, Reverend Greg Mast. Background, 40 years in the wilderness. Since I just celebrated my 40th anniversary of ordination in June, I take these things kind of personally, you know? 40 years in the wilderness. So here we are. You have you are focusing on the essential 100. You've had your time with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You've been in Egypt. You've come out of Egypt through the Red Sea. You're in the wilderness. Now you are coming down to the Jordan River and about ready to pass into the Promised Land. The time in the wilderness, 40 years. If you go directly from Egypt to Israel, walking, it may take you a week or two, or perhaps three. Certainly not 40 years. And so I grew up believing that Moses and the Israelites were lost for 40 years. My wife, of course, supported this idea because she announced that men never ask for directions. And so, of course, they were lost in the wilderness for 40 years. But there they were. But they were not, of course, lost, but rather God was taking these people, God's people, and forming them as a new people. He was washing out of their system a sense of being slaves to becoming a sense of free people. The Ten Commandments were given to them not to enslave them, but to free them, to give them the boundaries in which they were to live. So they wandered and they wandered. I have in my mind an image of their wandering around and around, and each time they pass the giant green sign on the highway that says Promised Land this way, Moses would say, "Not this year." And they would continue. And they would continue to wander and to live together and to live into a new identity, God's identity, as free people, not as enslaved people. And then finally, one year, they reached the big green sign, and Moses says, "This is the year." They go down the exit ramp. They go on down to the Jordan. And there they have an important conversation. I grew up in the church, in a Reformed church in Western Michigan. I grew up with the Jordan. You have to understand that when you grow up in the Reformed church in Western Michigan, when I grew up there 50 years ago, that meant that you went to church twice every Sunday, in the morning and in the afternoon. You went to Sunday school, you went to youth group, and you went to catechism on Wednesday evening. You were formed in the church, and you lived with the images of the church. And so I grew up believing that the Jordan was kind of a combination of the Nile River, the Amazon, and the Hudson all rolled into one. I figured it must be the biggest river in the entire world, because it was for me. And then, 25 years ago, I went to see the Jordan for the first time. And I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding me. I could take a rock and throw it over to the other side. It's more a stream than a river. It flows down from the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea. They come to the Jordan, and they camp at the edge. And Joshua says to them, and as Moses had said to them, I place before you this day a choice, life and death. What will you choose? What will you choose? Most of us don't make life and death decisions. Not very often. Even pastors don't participate in life and death decisions. Occasionally, we'll be in hospitals or in nursing homes when those decisions get made. But most of the time, most of us deal with the decisions of our day-to-day lives. All right, so there was one time I was lost, only once. It was in Iowa, so it was the fault of the state, obviously. Not my fault. I was in Iowa. Our children were small. We were visiting friends. We were driving across. We got off in this town to go to a Dairy Queen and to use the facilities. And as we're driving out of town to get back on Route 80 to go to Nebraska, things looked a little different than they looked on the way in. My wife turned to me and said, I think we made a mistake back there. I said, oh, no. We're taking an alternate way out of town. So we traveled. I described to our three children the joys of village and farm life. The town soon became gardens, which soon became cow pastures, which soon became cornfields, and I knew we were lost. And then we reached the corner. I call it the corner, because we had passed a number of corners. And in Iowa, I don't know what the deal is, but there are no signs on the corners in the middle of cornfields. Everybody knows where they are. You don't need a sign. And if you need a sign, you probably don't belong there. I think that's the kind of reasoning that goes on. So finally, we got to this corner, and there was a sign, and it had arrows. And there were four arrows coming off one way. Maybe you've seen one of these signs, and another four arrows going this way. And it basically, you know, Omaha, you know, 150 miles this way. Well, if you go down the four arrows, finally you reach Tokyo, Japan. 9,430 miles. All you have to do is take a left here, okay? You look to the right, you know, and you've got a sign going to Chicago and to New York, and if you go 4,920 miles, you'll end up in Paris. In a corner in Iowa, if you go left, you could end up in Tokyo, and if you go right, you could end up in Paris. Rolled up in that one crossroads was an incredibly important decision. I just wanted to get back to the highway. But no, buried in this very seemingly insignificant decision was something very important. Life and death rolled up into, do I go left or do I? Nathan Sharansky is a Jew, had been imprisoned in the Gulag in the Soviet Union, and finally emigrated with his family to Israel. And he writes about his 10 years in the Gulag. When I was in prison in the Gulag, I understood that every decision was a decision of life and death, good and evil. I got up and it was stark. It was clear. But now since I've moved to Israel, those stark decisions seem to be buried beneath 1,000 layers. Important decisions happen at crossroads, often buried. All right, we have 3 children. You have children because then you get grandchildren. You have 4 grandchildren. But as children, I remember well saying to our children, a kind of this sermon in part, you know, making decisions are important. If you go this way, if you go far enough, well, it's going to be a problem. You've got to think about the decisions you make. There are ramifications to the decisions you make. My good friend Leroy Cease, who for many years was the pastor at the Reformed Church in New Baltimore, who's now retired, for a decade we walked together in the walking trails in the 3 mountain ranges, in Catskills, Berkshires, and the Adirondacks. I had walked a lot, but had never walked a trail and didn't understand that trails are really 1,000 markers on trees, and you go from one marker to the next marker to the next marker. We walked hundreds of miles of the Appalachian Trail. We parked a car on one end and then another car on the other, and we would walk 10 or 12 or 15 miles in a day, from marker to marker to marker. Occasionally, we would reach a crossroads, and there would be 2 trails in front of us, and I would look at both and think to myself, well, they're going exactly the same place. I can see them. As far as I can see, they just parallel each other. And I would say to Leroy, well, let's just take one and go. And Leroy would look at me and say, and you call yourself a hiker? He'd pull out the map and say, if we take the right, we will end up going downhill down to the stream, and left, we will go up the mountain. In a single step, we will make decisions that will have profound ramifications. And so Joshua brought the people down to the Jordan and said to them, today I place before you life and death. A little decision about fording a stream that isn't as wide as this center aisle. Walk across that river, things are going to be different. So they come to the river. They decide to go across. Do you remember the story at the Red Sea when they're coming out of Egypt? God piled up the waters. We don't know what that looks like. Charlton Heston does, but we don't. All right? Cross on dry land, the Egyptian army gets flooded out. Now we come to the Jordan, it happens again. The Ark of the Covenant walks through the Jordan and people follow on dry land. The priests start. Dirk, this is when you preach an installation sermon for a new pastor, here it is. The priests begin and there's still water. And their robes are down. And they step into the mud. And they have to depend that God is actually going to bring them through on dry land. May not look like it, but pastors spend a lot of time in the mud. Right on the edge. Trying to lead. Trying to follow. And so they do. They go across. And as they are across, there's this great story that gets told. Joshua says to 12 men from the 12 tribes, I want you to each pick up a big stone from the middle of the Jordan. So they get the biggest guys and they go down and they pick up these stones and they carry them through and they put them down on the side of the Jordan in the Promised Land. They build a monument in Scotland. This is called a cairn. Has anyone heard that term, cairn, maybe? Yes. A cairn, it's a pile of rocks. If you're walking and hiking, what you do is you walk from marker to marker until you run out of trees. When you run out of trees, what do? Begin to look for a cairn. You look for a pile of rocks, and that's the place where the people before you have gone. It is leading you on the trail that you can no longer see. A monument to the past, hope for the future. You take the way of the cairn. And so they build a cairn on the side of the river. When the children come down, so goes the passage, when you go back to the river and your children ask you, so what do these stones mean? It will be your opportunity to say to them, ah, I need to tell you the story of what happened in this place. This is the place where we came out of the wilderness into the promised land. This is exactly the place. You see the giant pile of rocks? That's a cairn. That's a monument to God's mercy. But now, at the end of the passage, as I described to you, if you read it carefully, there's a little parenthetical statement in verse 9. Parentheses. It's a great place to find sermons, in parentheses, because people often skip over those. It says, and Joshua said to them, I want you to pick up a stone on the side and carry it into the middle of the river. Put it there. Pile it up. Now, for those of us who think ourselves to be pretty reasonable and linear thinkers, creating a monument in the middle of a river that nobody is ever going to see doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay, because the water is going to come back and it's going to cover that monument. Listen and watch. The family comes back. The parents are there. And one of the children says, how long has it been since we've had rain? In the midst of a drought. We're in the midst of a crisis. Our fields are dry. We are hungry. The river has come down, and at the top, one begins to see stones of that monument. Children say, what are those stones in the river? And then the parents respond, it was here. It was here that God brought us through and out of the wilderness into the promised land. And in the most difficult day of our lives, the life that we chose, the life of life, instead of the life of dying in the wilderness, God was with us in the most difficult time. It's the monument in the middle of the river. And then it says, and it is there to this day. It doesn't say that about the monument on the side of the river. You know, cairns can get torn down. I mean, they're sacred things. If you're a hiker, it's the last thing you would ever do is to take a cairn down. But sometimes people take them apart. And so you get up to the top of a mountain and you look around and there's no way that you will understand where to go next. The one in the middle of the river is there to this day. People cannot take it away. There is an eternity about that monument of grace. So I've thought about who are the cairns in my life. All right, so I'm in my 41st year of ministry. In the spring we retire and we will go to the promised land, otherwise known as East Nassau, Passawassa Lake, where we've had a house for the last 17 years. I've been thinking about who have been the cairns in my ministry. What events and what people? When I arrived in Irvington, New Jersey in 1978 and I was 26 years old, Bert, who was 62, had just retired and was one of the core elders of the church. And every day he walked from his house two blocks away and we would sit in my study and we would talk. Did that for 7 years as I was pastor at the Second Reformed Church in Irvington. Bert, gracious cairn in my life. He was as old as my parents without the grumbling, without the face. He was there. And Ethel, who was a member of that congregation, a number of our folk who would retire would move down to the shore. Have you heard about the shore in New Jersey? We got a shore down there. They come out of towns and they move down to the shore. And a couple of times a year, Ethel and I would take the car and we would go and visit all of our members at the shore and we would have lunch together. And Ethel was a cairn for me. 2 weeks ago, exactly 2 weeks ago, we buried a cairn in my life. Will Ivins, who was in his 71st year of ordained ministry in the Reformed Church in America. having been ordained in 1945. We buried him 2 weeks ago today. He worked with me at First Albany for 11 years as a part-time calling pastor. He was a cairn in my life, cairn of grace. You have cairns, my friends. Each of you have cairns, and Emmanuel has cairns. Dirk and I were sitting in the office, and I said, there's the old church down in Castleton. The move from the old church in Castleton up here, way out into the cow pastures, was a big deal, an important thing in the life of this congregation. It gave, in many ways, new life and new vision and new energy. It was an important decision, a decision of life and death. So this congregation and you as individuals have cairns. And there is a cairn. There are a number of them in Scripture. But let me describe one that you know well. So you come out forest and you go up a hill. There is a cairn, not of stone but of wood. The cairn remains. It never disappears. It is called the cross. It stays there at the top of the hill. And it reminds us over and over and over again that there has been one who has passed this way before. And in the middle of our crisis, when there is no marker for us to go, there is the cross that leads us forward. And if we are faithful, we go past the cross. We see a stone. Stone is rolled away. Death has become life. Night has become an eternal day. Cairn of grace is with us always. Now to the one who was, who is, and who is to come be all honor and glory this day and forever. Amen.